Blog Talk Radio.
Joining me, my name is Brian Sons, also known as Onyx, and you are listening to Onyx Nights Paranormal Radio. Guys, if you heard and recognized the opening song, that is actually Ghoul Town and our guest Lyle Blackburn. He's going to be on the show tonight. I am really excited about this. In my opinion, Lyle is one of, if not the go-to guys when it comes to The Legend of Boggy Creek and Falco, Arkansas, and also The Lizard Man. And you guys are probably thinking, okay, well, what does Lizard Man have to do with Sasquatch or even The Legend of Boggy Creek? We're going to get to the answers of that. Like I said, Lyle is here. We're going to delve into that. We're going to talk about Boggy Creek, We're going to talk about the Lizard Man. We're going to talk about Sasquatch. We're going to talk about Lyle's band, and we're going to talk about what Lyle has coming. A lot of you might recognize Lyle. He's been on a couple of TV shows, Finding Bigfoot, Monsters and Mysteries in America. But there's another show that I saw Lyle on prior to any of that, and I'm going to get to that. We're going to talk to him about that. It's gonna be great. He has the band Ghoul Town. I believe, I might be mistaken, but I believe Lyle, they had their last show in June. I hope I'm not mistaken. I believe that's the case. But we're gonna get all that info from Lyle. Before we do, I'm gonna go ahead and play our ad from our sponsor. It's mandatory. I have to play this on every show. So I'm going to go ahead and play it this time. And then when we come back, I'm going to have Lyle on with us. And it's going to be a great show. Thanks for tuning in. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Going to New Orleans for the weekend? For vacation? Are you wanting to take a ghost hunting tour but tired of the same old walking tours where you don't even get to go into the location and you're not even sure if the history is accurate? Well, call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. This team of guys are going to take you into a real haunted location where you're going to get to use the state-of-the-art equipment that ghost hunters use. Be the paranormal investigator. You get to work with an experienced, competent team of investigators and have the real, true paranormal experience. Experience the dark side of New Orleans. Call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. They have tours Friday through Monday. Tours start at 7 and at 10 p.m. For more information, call 504-708 3567.
All right, guys, welcome back. I'm your host, Onyx. We have Lyle in queue. We're going to go ahead and bring him on. We're going to get this show rocking, and later on in the show, I'm going to let you guys call in, and if you have any questions for Lyle, or you know, just want to speak to him, just want to say hi. You can go ahead and do that. I know I've got a lot of friends. I've got a lot of guys in my own team and my own group that have met Lyle, that know Lyle. I'm sure they'll be calling in and chit-chatting with them. But without any further delay, let's get the show on the road. Hey, Lyle, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, man. I am super glad to get you on here with me. I have wanted to get you on here for a while. What the listeners might not know is I actually tried to get you on in May, but you had everything going on with Ghoul Town, with your band. And am I wrong in saying that your last show was in June? Is that correct?
Well, pretty much every show is our last show. I mean,
okay.
Part of that is just, make a long story short, we haven't toured since about 2010, and part of that is because I kind of switched gears and wanted to write some books. And once I did that, I sort of the success of that and the time it took to research and do all that kind of stuff just sort of took away from the band, which was fine. I was touring as a musician for so long, I was just not much wanting to get on the road. So we play every once in a while, and we're never sure what is the last show. The last show we played, it's been 2 years since we had played previously, so it's just not something I have much time for in between. Actually work on three jobs, and then I have the book. So
basically it's you guys just kind of get in the mood to do another gig and say, hey, let's all get together and do it again, and you know, is that correct?
Yeah, I kind of do it for the fans. I mean, the band's fairly successful, so we just get a lot of people, you know, requesting shows and all that. But so, you know, every once in a while I try to slip one in. So I do my best.
Okay, well, you know, I'm going to, and I'm reading a little bit of biography on you. at this point in time. You have two books. One is The Beast of Boggy Creek, The True Story of the Falcon Monster, and Lizard Man, The True Story of the Bishopville Monster, correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. What is the connection? What is the similarities? Or is there any at all between the Lizard Man and, let's say, Sasquatch or the Falcon Monster?
Well, I mean, there's some similarities and some connections, and then there's not. I mean, my books, you know, I just ultimately like cryptids and strange monster cases, and that's the subject of my books. And so they were just two cases that I thought were, you know, would make a good story. I mean, obviously,
right.
The legend of Boggy Creek had an impact on me when I saw it as a kid, and you know, Falk is close to me, and I've just got a real connection. So my first book with The Beast of Boggy Creek was sort of chronicling everything that's involved with the behind the scenes of the legend of Boggy Creek and all the history of the Falcon Monster, because nobody had ever written a book on the subject yet. You know, just about everybody into Bigfooting knows of the movie or was
right.
heavily influenced. So once I had written that book and, you know, it was popular, and kind of the way I did the book was very personal. I mean, I went there, I talked to as many of the witnesses as I could, and I, you know, tried to get involved in it. I don't want to just sit back and write books by doing Google searches or whatever, or referencing
right.
other people's books. So The Lizard Man, then, you know, I was kind of looking for the subject for a second book, and that was one that always kind of intrigued me. It was like, what is this? You know, some kind of like modern real-life creature from the Black Lagoon or something. I was, you know, loved
mm-hmm.
Just the thought of reptilian humanoids. So I was doing what I called a swamp tour. I was going all over the southeast, going to different swamps, and I went to Escape Ore Swamp in Bishopville, South Carolina, and started looking into the whole story. And realized it was a lot to it, more than I'd ever heard, and I thought, well, this would be a cool, you know, this might make a cool book. So that's just kind of how that one came about.
Well, but, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, just to highlight, you know, they're both small towns. They're both towns that are associated with, you know, a spooky cryptid monster. So, you know, in those respects, they're similar, of course.
Well, I'm definitely going to have to pick them up. I'm sorry to admit I haven't gotten around to those yet, but I'm definitely going to have to pick them up. And I apologize for that also. Now, you have been on many shows, but I could have sworn that I've seen you on something prior to Finding Bigfoot and prior to Monsters and Mysteries in America. Were you ever on an episode of Monster Quest?
No. That's my friend and colleague Ken Gerhard, you're probably thinking of, who also wears a, you know, kind of a black hat like mine.
Right. I'm aware of Ken, but I've seen you on something else.
Let's see. Monsters, well, the first thing I was ever on was the CBS Sunday Morning Show, very briefly. They did a cryptozoology feature, which they had interviewed me and Ken was on it, and Lauren Coleman and some guys. So that was kind of the first thing I was on. And then Monsters and Mysteries in America was the next thing. And then I was on, believe it or not, I was on Shipping Wars once. And then that's it. Oh, wait, I was on HGTV. They did a show called Home Strange Home, which featured my actual house because I have a huge collection of, like, cryptozoology, Bigfoot tracks and monster toys. So those are the only shows.
It has to be that CBS one. And you've never been in any movies or anything of that nature, have you?
Yeah, I've been in several movies too, cameos. A movie called American Nightmare that came out though in about, I don't know, say 2001.
Okay.
What else have I been in? The movie Return of the Jackalope, some real low budget, so, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know. I'm familiar with Ken Gerhardt, but I don't know. I mean, it had to be that CBS You know, I just know that I've seen you somewhere else before, and it's a very big familiarity there on my part. Now, you, if you can, give us the brief lowdown for the Lizard Man and what exactly the legend is behind him.
Well, that case, you know, if you've read a lot of cryptozoology books, you know, it's mentioned from time to time, and it kind of hinged around one of the more sensational encounters, which occurred in late June of 1988. And in this case, a young man had come forward after a series of other connected events. He came to the sheriff's office and claimed that he had been basically attacked by a 7-foot-tall, greenish, scaly humanoid.
Right.
And this occurred near a place called Skateboard Swamp, where he had to drive through on his way home from work, and it was late at night, and he just unfortunately had a flat tire there, and as he was finishing up changing the tire, he sees, you know, this creature coming at him through the grass. He could see it in the moonlight, and it, you know, he of course tried to jump in his car, and the thing jumped on the car and ends up trying to get in, and basically seemed as though it was attacking him. So
wow.
Once that story came out, and there was a sheriff, Liston Truesdale, there in Bishopville, and Bishopville is, you know, is a small town in South Carolina, and so they, you know, the sheriff's department is a county sheriff's department serving the whole county, but the sheriff really took it quite seriously. He believed that something really happened to the kid. He really wasn't sure of what. You know, he was like, you know, what are we talking about, a lizard man or what? But he had heard from several other people that were saying that people had been seeing something down in the swamp, and that's what they were calling it. And so that, you know, the investigation the police did kind of led to some other witnesses that came forward with sightings, and, you know, as usual with these cases, you know, there's all kinds of little side roads with finding footprints and the police being involved, and the media got involved. It was heavily covered, like People Magazine, CBS News, ABC News, all, I mean, huge things. I mean, the Oprah Winfrey Show called this kid Christopher Davis, who had had that initial
wow.
attack. So it was just a kind of the media circus. So I went out there just to sort out the details. And what I found was I was given access to all the old police files. And in this case, you had a sheriff who really took it fairly seriously.
Right.
And he had actual documents from witnesses, handwritten, like days after the incident took place. And so, you know, you don't always have that kind of stuff in a cryptid case. And I thought that was
right.
really
and,
cool.
Right. I mean, you rarely even hear about attacks in most cryptic mm-hmm. cases. So
right.
that alone
so,
is unique.
Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, what I always say about these cases, and especially my books, you know, I can't necessarily prove or disprove, and I don't even try. It just ultimately has to be a good story and has to be something that I think is, I mean, I just love these spooky cryptid tales, you know, and
right
you,
just put it out there
to,
yeah just put it out
yeah.
there and let it be what it is. I understand that. So I have another question for you. And I'm sure you're very familiar with the whole ufology. Could this lizard man be what has been known throughout history as the reptilians?
Well, I mean, certainly, I suppose it could. And I kind of approached the book in a more of a cryptozoology angle, although, you know, I do talk about theories and try to, you know, say, hey, could that be one of the things? Is it an alien? Is it a subterranean reptilian or whatever? In this particular case, you know, there wasn't any UFO sightings that corresponded to it. It's a very remote place. Not a place where, you know, people are going to miss UFO landings or anything like that. So I really saw no connection, at least that I could find, to aliens or spacecraft. Right. Or there's no cave systems out there. And I've seen a few. Most reviews of the book are outstanding. I mean, I could say it's critically acclaimed, but I did get dinged by people who really wanted it to be, 40 and times kind of basically said that it could be an alien, and there's just no evidence of that, So tell the story
that's why
it is.
Yeah, that's why I asked, and obviously. You truly, in your research, you truly believe that this person saw something, whether it be what he claims to have seen, or he saw something, or something that had definitely attacked him, at least in his mind.
Exactly.
Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. I think, and if I get witnesses come forward that I don't believe their story, I don't even include that stuff.
Right.
But yeah. I think, and also the sheriff who I spent a lot of time with agrees, something happened to this kid, and that, I truly believe that something did happen. It's not like he's fabricating the story or making it up, and that includes the other witnesses I was able to interview, and certainly the people I read their affidavits. You could tell, man, these people are not making this stuff up. What they saw is what they believe they saw, and to me, unless I can disprove them, then, again, it's the story. And some of the later witnesses, and I know you were asking about some connections, some of the later witnesses that saw it pretty close actually said they believed it had hair. And to me, and they even indicated, they said it looked like a Sasquatch. So in a way, the case involves some Bigfoot angles in what I personally believe that it's possible. The people were seeing a Bigfoot, or it could have been a wet Bigfoot, or a Bigfoot covered in moss. Who knows? But there are similarities to Bigfoot.
Yeah, I mean, you go out in the woods at night, same as I do, and we both know that in moments of fear and adrenaline, that what one person sees isn't always exactly what another person may see or interpret.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I think, people that look too close and say, well, these are all conflicting. I'm like, well, it's dark. It's a brief sighting. They got a few seconds to decide, does it have hair or scales? And, in some ways,
right.
They just gave it,
It makes you wonder if these overly critical people, I mean, if they wanted the guy to literally get face-to-face with whatever it was that was coming at him, I mean, come on, it doesn't happen like that. Yeah,
right,
you don't go, hey, can I get your autograph? You're not going to do that.
Right. The people that got that close perhaps are not around to be interviewed.
I was thinking the same thing. I didn't want to go down that road, but yeah, I was thinking pretty much along those same lines. It's interesting. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I might be shooting way away from the mark on this one, but there were some shows recently, excuse me, where older woman, her van was torn up and bitten and things of that nature. Is that I thought that was in reference to the Lizard Man. Am I wrong? And
no, you're right, that is part of that case. And in fact, before Christopher Davis came forth in 1988 with the whole attack thing, the very first call the sheriffs got was a strange case where the people said their car was vandalized, and they lived down on Skateboard Swamp, and the car looked like it had been chewed up by an animal. And that's really where it all started. And then there's been two other cases since then, the last one being 2009, I believe, in which people have found their cars all chewed up. And of course, everybody instantly brings up the Lizard Man. I mean, there's no physical evidence to link it, but it's weird how all that stuff was going on right in the same vicinity where people were, claiming to see the Lizard Man. So, it's another sort of a tangent that's associated with this case.
You know, I watch those shows and I've read the stories, and while doing so, I had a possible theory, and this may be completely, you know, out there, as to why this thing would attack the car. And, you know, I know from myself from having cats, perhaps this thing was after a cat or maybe even some other small animal that went up in under the car and into the engine to escape. And this thing was just so determined to get it that it started tearing up the car. Could that be possible?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that that is the case. And I think, you know, various law personnel out there over the years, you know, believe that it really was an animal and that, yeah, it was trying to get in there. The question was, you know, was it a coyote? Was it a, you know, a pit bull or an unknown animal? So yeah, I think certainly it was trying to get at something that ran up, that, you know, was hiding up in the engine area.
Right, because, I mean, I know especially when you have small kittens, especially during the wintertime, you have to be very careful because they will get up in the engine and it could sometimes lead to disastrous results. And, you know, that just clicked whenever I heard the stories and watched the shows. That's really interesting. I definitely want to talk more with you about it and delve more into the lizard man in the future. Now, what I want to get to now is something that has been dear to my heart, like you, since childhood. I grew up in born and raised in South Louisiana, the legend of Boggy Creek, the beast of Boggy Creek. I saw that movie when I was very little. I loved it, and it rang so true to me and hit really close to home, if you will. I want to get into that because there's a lot of that. You know, people, they watch the movie, but there's a lot of that that took place outside of the movie that most general public doesn't know about. And if I'm not mistaken, continues or has continued to take place in that area. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. I've documented quite a few sightings since my book leaves off in 2010, and I've documented several sightings since then. And of course, most people, you just ask the average person, they all thought that happened, that, you know, happened back in the 60s and 70s, and that was it. But once I started looking into it, there's been a history of sightings all along, and I even traced them back as far as 1908 being the very first possible sighting. So, yeah, there was just a whole lot more to it than what you see in the movie. I mean, the movie's great, and a lot of people even think that, oh, you know, a couple of those were real, and then they made all the rest up. Not true. Pretty much everything you see in the movie was based on a real report by a real person. So, yeah, there's a lot.
Right.
To
it's basically a big reenactment, but it's all based on true incidents as reported by those individuals.
Right. You know, and of course the movie, you know, plays them up for effect, and I mean, you know, makes them spooky and entertaining. And no doubt that, I mean, you see one of these things in real life, it would have been spooky. So, but, you know, the movie dramatizes it in some ways, but in some ways it is just a reenactment. I mean, it's what you see on, it's what Monster Quest was doing. It's what Monsters
right.
and Mysteries in America, it kind of set the tone for the reenactments that we see now.
And, you know, I find that, me personally, I find that, the broadcast where they actually have the real-life people telling their story, I find those more intriguing and more frightful than just a regular reenactment or a regular show. For example, one of the shows that I loved more than any was Paranormal Witness. I don't know if that's still on the air or not. I don't think so, but I love that show because it actually had the real people telling their stories, and those stories would be reenacted. And I think that is part of what holds the movie, The Legend of Boggy Creek, what has helped it go the duration. is those real people that are involved in it.
Right. Yeah. No doubt. And yeah, I mean, Paranormal Witness is another example of sort of the modern take on what Pierce was doing back in 1971 with Legend of Boggy Creek. And I mean, you know, Monsters and Mysteries in America, I've been on that show like maybe 4 episodes, very similar thing. And we, you know, it's got the witnesses telling the stories, and those are always much more compelling than an actor or something like these movies into, you know, some of these Bigfoot movies. It just, they can't compare to The Legend of Boggy Creek because it's actors, not real people, you know?
Yeah. And it really gave that whole, setting of being in the swamp after dark, or even at sunset, that whole feel that comes along with it, for anyone who's ever actually been, whether in the swamp or in the woods around, you know, when all that's going on, it just really, really brings you into it. And for me personally, that's what I love about it. Now, you say that there's still things that are going on there, and you're right, I'm well aware of that. In fact, I have a group that's over in Northeast Texas run by Johnny Holmes that go to the Falcon. I think you might even know them. Brian Empey, Michael Hall, Greg Moorhead, Jeff Stewart, Arlie Everett, they Ruth Thigpen, they all go over there around Falcon and do their investigations over there. And
sure. Oh yeah, I know each and every one of them, and they're all good folks and good investigators. So it's great that they're going into that area, because it's kind of been ignored for quite a while. I mean, I have some buddies that had done some research in that area several years ago, and I mean, I go up there quite a bit, but
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was saying, you know, but Johnny and Greg and Brian and all them been going up there recently, which is cool.
I would have thought that an area like that would have been inundated with researchers just everywhere, so much so that everyone is here and everyone else is, you know, because you get these guys that go out there and do these calls and so forth. Me personally, I don't do that. You know, every time I've tried doing that, everything just shuts down. You know, it's like they leave. So, you know, to each their own,
right,
of course.
Sure. Well, there's an issue up there, because in the particular areas, there is a lot of private land. I mean, some areas you can get to, you just have to know where you're going, and a lot of it is on private land. So it's not like Sam Houston National Forest or something in Texas, or you know, there is the Sulphur River Wildlife Management Area, but it's not as accessible, and it's bottom lands. You know, there's a bayou down there.
That's what I was thinking too. You have to be really, really skilled to be able to get back in those really marshy, swampy areas.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, weekend Bigfooters have a hard time. I mean, there's just not a whole lot of places. A lot of my research, I mean, I've taken canoes on long trips, overnight trips and things, multiple days down the Sulphur River. So I had to travel by water, because, of course, that's, you know, public. You can access, you know, the banks and all those areas. So it's a good way to move a long distance. But if I was trying to cover all that same ground, I'd be running into people's fences and properties and double-barrel shotguns right and left. And
well,
let me tell you, those people after the Legend of Boggy Creek, let me tell you, you go on somebody's property down there, you don't know what you're doing, and you will find out you're in the wrong place, because there's, you know, a history of people running amok down there looking for the creature. So they don't take kindly to, you know, a lot of strangers coming
and
in.
And tourists,
there.
Yeah. I can tell.
I mean, they
can
don't
totally
mind the tourists.
Their private property, you know.
Yeah,
they don't mind the tourists,
yeah,
but they don't want them on their private property, of course.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, if you want to drive around and see the sites, everybody's totally cool, and they've really actually tried to open the doors a little bit more for that type of thing. You know, we're having a Boggy Creek Festival for the second time this year, so we're trying to provide something where people can come down there and, you know, and see something or take a tour with me.
When is that taking place?
This year, it's going to be October the 25th.
Ah, that's why Johnny and Johnny Holmes and Michael Hall have been mentioned to me about getting me down there in October, over there in October.
Yeah.
And I hope to, and I definitely, I'm in Mississippi right now. I'm actually, to be honest with you, I'm straight across the way from you guys over there in Fowl. And I'm really hoping to be able to get over there this year. I do research here. I go out. I try to go out at least every night here. And you know, I've gotten some great recordings. Picked something up on video just last week. That's really being reviewed and being passed around, I guess you could say, online. And I love going out there. I just looking out there, you know, any chance I can get, I'll go out there, you know, at night and just sit and listen and, you know, walk around and so forth. And I've had some very interesting occurrences take place, a lot of which I've talked about, some that I have not talked about yet. And I don't know if I really will, to be honest with you, because it's, you know, there's so many people looking to cash in on this thing. And that's what kind of gets me, you know, that's what kind of gets me to be a little bit more private about certain things. And I'm sure you know exactly, I'm sure you've dealt with it too and know exactly where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I mean, I'm to the point, you know, I've been doing this long enough that there's so much sketchy and bad, let's say, bad evidence, but evidence that doesn't do anything, you know. So, you know, I find things, unless I feel that it's something definitive or better than what's already out there,
yeah,
you know, I don't just start putting all that stuff out there, you know. I mean, it's, the internet is clogged with blurry Bigfoot videos and photos of shadows where people say it's a Bigfoot, and, you know, hey, it might be a Bigfoot, but it's,
yeah,
it's a kind of a waste of energy, to, at least for me, to sit there and try to figure it out.
Yeah,
for me,
the video,
it's like,
the video that I put last week, I wouldn't even thought twice about it had there not been a wood knock and other, you know, mm-hmm. other possible signs prior to that. And you know, I heard the rustling. I turned on the camcorder. Didn't hear any more rustling, didn't see anything, so I started to walk away. I actually got about 20 feet away, then I heard the tree knock and rustling again, and I'm quickly opening the camcorder and trying to get it on and trying to film at the same time, and I just caught that one little snippet. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I didn't, because I'm looking at the camcorder, I didn't see this movement with my own eyes, and I kind of regret that. I kind of wish I had paid a little bit better attention, or at least stayed in the area the first time I was, you know, in that one location. Because I'm running
yeah.
back the 20 feet, turning on the camcorder at the same time, watching for snakes. But I've had other incidents in the same area with tree knocks, tree shaking, and what I call, I can only describe it, Lyle, as them picking up a branch or a log and slamming it to the ground. I had three different locations, all within about 4 or 5 seconds of each other. And then again, the howls and the tree knocks. And here's the thing that I kind of, and this is all speculation, of course, but I'm kind of leaning towards the tree knocks or their way of saying, hey, there's a human in the area, lay low. Because I was leaving this area, I felt like I was being ushered out of this area with the tree shake. Everything was happening that same night, one behind each other. So I'm leaving the area, and I yawn really loud, intentionally, just to see, you know, what kind of reaction it would get. And instantly after the yawn, there was a tree knock. And I get further down the road, you know, probably about half a mile, going around a couple of bends, a couple of curves, and then they start howling. And the howls is what drew me back there to begin with. And it's like when I get around them, the howling stops. They don't make any vocal, you know, howls or anything like that. Only a tree knock when I'm in the area. But it's not until I get out of the area that they start becoming vocal again and doing the howls. If that makes sense to you, that's how everything that I've dealt with has taken place.
Right. And I mean that's certainly a lot surrounding a particular circumstance.
You know, and you know, you can howls could be, you know, it could be anything. I know that. These howls are much different than coyotes. And then there was eye shine that was seen that same night. And a lot of people describe this red eye shine. And I guess I could see where they would think it was red. But for me, I saw four different individuals instantly duck behind trees the minute I shined my light on them. But the eye shine was like, if you remember from school, the color crayon that was red-orange. It was like that, but you know, the shine. But it was that color. It wasn't red. It wasn't orange. It was kind of a in between color. And all this in one particular area that I frequent and have gone to hell probably last 6-7 years. And it's gotten really interesting. And the other night I actually went out there and I had my family with me. We went out there and for a little while, and my girlfriend and, you know, kids and everything, they all heard howls and whistles and tree knocks. And we came home, and then the next night I didn't go out there. And from my front porch, now this area is very close to my home. I live right at the edge of a wildlife refuge. Well, from my front porch, I hear howls back from my area, and definitely not coyotes. And I'm kind of leaning towards that. I really believe that they saw us out there, you know, whenever I brought my family out there. And I really feel like the howls the next night that I didn't go, I really feel like that was for me, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Like maybe trying to get my attention, or maybe trying to get me to go out there.
Right.
And again, I can't, you know, I can't prove any of this. I can't say with 100% certainty that's what was happening. It's all interpretation and speculation, of course. But you
right.
know, I really feel that this particular group is familiar with me. And has seen me both during the day and at night, even when I don't even know they're there. And that there is some level of, oh, it's just him, he's okay, you know?
Right.
And that, like, again, that's just the you know, impression that I get. I could be completely way off, but, you know, going out there every night, well, for the most part, every night, you know, that's just what I think is going on. And have you ever experienced anything similar to that?
No, unfortunately, all the wood knocks and the trees, and I've been in the woods since I was a little kid. I've never seen any of that. You know, people even take me out to spots and say, oh, this is where all this happened and always happens. And I guess I'm bad. Look, none of that ever happens when I'm there. But, you know, I mean.
Well,
I
tell you what, you're more than, and I'm sure you've heard this before too, but you're more than welcome to come over here to my area and go out there with me. You know, I'm not saying I get activity every time that I'm out there, but for the most part, since I've been going out there every night, you know, week after week after week, there has not been a week that I haven't gotten some kind of activity.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I certainly did. If that's all I did in my life, I could go from one place to another with the groups of people that invite me. So, you know, and I wish I could. That'd be so awesome. But, yeah, I mean, just from my personal experience, and, you know, most times I'm not a member of any kind of group or anything like that. So, most of my experience involves me and a couple other dudes. And now, not to say that I haven't heard weird things in the woods and, you know, I've heard strange howls. I've heard all kinds of stuff, but
you can't with 100% certainty say, hey, that was a Sasquatch. Or...
Right, and there's never, man, if that's not the case, I can only then just say, well, it could have been, but, you know, one person's, I mean, I've been right in the place where one person says they heard a tree get pushed over, and I've been in the same place, and I just watched a tree fall over.
Right.
You know, so I hear a lot of people say, well, you know, something pushed this tree over. I'm like, dude, I've been standing there in the forest, and a tree freaking falls over. I mean, and this happened in Falkland, and had I not seen the tree, sure, I could have said, oh, man, it sounded like something was watching me and pushed it over, but I happened to see it. So there's a lot of things like that where weird stuff happens or whatever, but couldn't say for certain if it was a Sasquatch.
It's either coincidental or circumstantial.
Right. So not, you know, I hope it is, but, you know, mostly, you know, in a part ways, I'm somebody who documents things. I'm a Bigfoot historian, I suppose. So in some ways, I'm part field researcher, but I'm also part, you know, historian and investigative reporter. So I'm somewhere in between that, I guess. So, but, you know, I'm very open-minded and always trying to put myself into places where potentially something could happen, and maybe someday I'll get my own sighting. You know, that would be the ultimate, obviously, and that's kind of my main goal. It's like the woods can make all the sounds they want, but I want to see
well,
one, you know.
I totally agree. You know, a lot of people, and it's sad to say, a lot of people are in this, you know, for the financial benefit of it. Me personally, you know, or to prove to the world, me personally.
Good luck getting the financial rewards. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, they don't realize that, of course. They see
right.
You know, they see this Finding Bigfoot on TV, and you know, they instantly think that there's a big demand for it. But you know, regardless of that, I don't. You know, it's like I've said many times. You know, I'm not trying to prove it to the world. You know, I know they exist. The world can go out there and get off the couch, get off the internet, go out there themselves and surely find out. You know, I'm doing it for me and to perhaps better understand these beings and why they're out there and how they do what they do. 'Cause to me, it's envious. You know, they're out there. They don't need all this electricity. They don't need this technology, and they're doing just fine, obviously.
Right.
So there's that level of envy there, and I go out there, like I said, in the hopes, and maybe this is a little bit far fetched, but in the hopes of being accepted, if you will, by these things. And getting a little bit closer to get a little bit more knowledge on them.
Right. And no, I think what you're touching on there is a big underlying current of why people are interested in this, because it is something that potentially you could become in touch with that other people aren't, or you could learn something about our connection with nature, you know, sort of an assumption that these creatures are more in touch with nature. They don't need technology. They don't
That's
need
right.
that. And it's kind of fascinating. It's almost like our primitive self that's walking in the woods, and we want to be in touch with that. So.
It's funny you mention that, because that's what I truly believe they are. Is a very primitive race that we may have thought has gone extinct, and it hasn't. You know, I mean, back to the envy part, I mean, you don't see them destroying their environment, you know. That's what we do. You know, they're living at one with it and, you know, adapting to it, not making it adapt to them like we are. And that's where the envy comes in, I think.
Yeah, no, envy is a good word. And, yeah, I mean, you know, I feel some of that same draw to the subject because, yeah, man, these are the true forest, you know, the true Rambos. I mean, they can go out there and survive and live in the forest. They don't need us for nothing, you know, and they're it's as green as you can get. They don't destroy their environment. They are one
exactly.
with it. Stuff that we've lost, and I think that, you know, we can see that within
they don't take more than they need, you know, that gets a little bit closer to it.
All right, so, yeah, that's definitely one level. I mean, it's a mystery. It's something that people are fascinated with, you know, and, you know, if you're a scientist, you might want to prove it from that angle. If you're somebody who likes quote-unquote monsters, you know, you find it exciting. So there's all these different reasons why people find interest in Bigfoot, and that's really cool, and it's something that can hopefully put people, you know, out of the chat room and into the woods, you know.
Right, right. I mean, you know, that's what I tell people, you know, when they ask me, I say, well, you know, how do they get involved in this? I say, well, first, you know, it's best to know your local wildlife, know what is out there that could be making these sounds, familiarize yourself with them, with whatever predators may be in your area, the sounds that the natural wildlife is capable of making, familiarize yourself with that, and then just use common sense, you know, when you go out there. You know, and that's what I do more than anything, is I try to put my mind in the mind of, say, the Sasquatch. What would I do? Where would I be?
Yeah.
How would I, you know, conduct myself, you know, if I lived out in the woods? And it's very similar to, and I've said this many times before, it's very similar in my mind to, say an escaped fugitive who's out in the woods and doesn't want to be found. You know, if someone truly, truly doesn't want to be found, you know, aside from bloodhounds, you know, if they truly don't want to be found by people, they can go out in the middle of nowhere and disappear.
Right.
Assuming they know, you know, what to eat and how to survive, you know, it's totally possible. And I kind of relate the Sasquatch to that. You know. And people are like, well, how intelligent do you think these things are? You know, on a human level, I think they're about on the same level as a human that may have Down syndrome, if you will. And that's totally no offense towards, you know, anyone with Down syndrome, of course. But I think that's where their level of intelligence may be.
All right. Yeah, I mean, and it, of course, all just complete conjecture. I mean, it's drawing from a lot from personal experience and drawing from what we've read about others' experiences. And
of
then,
course.
You know, and that's one thing I noticed. You know, I noticed in the Bigfoot at large, you know, it's like people have certain theories, but ultimately every theory is, I guess, good enough until somebody can prove
that's
otherwise.
Right,
you know?
Because,
so,
that's right. Because
you know.
until one is captured or there's a dead body brought in or one is, quote, civilized, we'll never know. There are no experts on this. You know, one person's theory, as you said, is just as good as another. And like you said earlier, I'll never, unless I have a video or very, very close photo of one of these things, I will never put anything on there and say, hey, this is a Sasquatch. This is definitely a Sasquatch. Because I don't know with 100% certainty. I'm just going to say, hey, look at this track. Hey, I found something in the woods. You know, I caught something on my video. Here it is. Look at it. What do you think? And not only is that kind of covering my own ass, but, you know, it's just logical. And, you know, because you have these people who... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, as I say, there's got to be some level of... base level of what is good evidence and what is things that are just cluttering it up. I mean, you know, a shadowy photo of a Bigfoot in 1970 might be an interesting piece of evidence. A shadow behind a tree in 2014 is just another bit of stuff that I start to look at and go, wait a minute, I mean, this isn't
That's the one thing I hate more than anything is, you know, you get everyone wanting to jump on the bandwagon now, it seems, and they go out and they just take pictures of trees and they post these pictures and they expect you to go and play Where's Waldo with a picture of trees, claiming there's 10 or 12 Sasquatch in this one picture.
Right, essentially. And you know, I mean, that's cool. I mean, anybody can really do what they want, but I think as a for people who consider Bigfoot research something that they invest a lot of time and effort in, you know, this starts to eat up, waste a lot of time and takes away from that which is good evidence, like a good footprint cast, that the foot actually looks like a five-toed print or whatever, that you go, okay, now this could be something, we make a cast, we try to get Meldrum or Bergman or somebody to look at it, get another opinion, and these things are worthwhile. And then
it all gets conjumbled together. You know, you may have a great image, but because all these other silly images of forest and trees and whatever are there, it all gets conjumbled together to where it's all just one big laughable, you know. Display, and it's sad, really.
It doesn't, you know, and I'm not saying that shadow isn't a Bigfoot, and if the person was there and saw that, and then that's the best photo he or she could get, then that's totally cool. But once you put that into the sort of one-dimensional grind of the internet, then suddenly it just becomes nothing that can help support the theory. And certainly, you know, people complain that mainstream science doesn't want to get behind it. Well, they're even worse. They know even less about what's good and bad than we do. All they see is a blur of too much stuff, and they say, well, you know, unless somebody gets a more clear photo or somebody gets a piece of a video that looks intriguing, I can understand why they're probably just going to kind of leave it as is, because the longer it goes where we don't have another Patterson film, you know, Patterson film was 67, we're still talking about it. We need something new that's that close, that lengthy, to where it gives a kick and a boost to something. You know, even scientists go, whoa, okay, now let's look at this, because – you know, this is something new that's adding to it. It's exceeding what's already out there, and I think exceeding what's already out there is the key word. Let's try to get evidence that exceeds what's already out there, because no amount of what we've done so far can prove it. So, unfortunately, so.
Well, in the case of the Patterson-Gimlin film, It's my understanding, and again, I may be completely wrong, but it's my understanding that the fact that they were on the horses kind of masked their scent, masked their arrival, which is what I was going to get to. You know, unless someone can get out there and see a Sasquatch before it sees them, or before it knows they are there, it's going to be really, really hard to capture that quality of video.
Sure. I mean, I think, to me, the way to do this, and I've heard other people comment, what I've always believed, in order to be successful at this, you've got to take more of the stance of a hunter. Look at all the – and I notice this. People go out with – they got – I mean, they might have a FLIR camera and all this stuff, but they pay absolutely no attention to their body and their smells. Yet you've
That's right.
got a guy who's going deer hunting or even duck hunting. Ducks have great vision, and if you're not well hidden, or
yep.
if you're going deer hunting and you haven't covered your scent, know what you're doing, use techniques like that, you're not going to get anywhere close enough to these animals because
That's
they can smell
100%
you.
True.
They can smell you from a mile away, and I would think logically. If Bigfoots exist, in order for them to have remained so elusive, they've got to have a very heightened sense of smell and hearing and everything else. These animals know you're coming a mile away. It would take great efforts in most places to sneak up on them. Of course, people tend to run across them, or it runs across the road and it gets seen, and these type of
yeah.
things. But it's usually, if you're setting out to go hunting it, and hunting in the sense of I'm getting a video or a photo, I kind of adopt some of those techniques for, trying to at least mask my scent, or take all the stuff I learned from my father, who's hunted everything from elk in the mountains of New Mexico to javelinas in West Texas
right.
to deer
and
everything else.
I spoke about this with Mike Woolley. He was on the show, and he's a hunter. I'm a hunter as well. When I'm out there looking for Sasquatch or researching, I don't use any scent cover or anything of that nature. And here's why. One night, me and a teammate, we were walking, and this is the closest encounter I ever had. It was a roar from about 50 yards. This thing didn't know we were there. We were on a trail. There was a patch of woods, and on the other side of the woods was a field. And we were walking on the trail, and it wasn't until we went from grass under our feet to actually leaf clutter under our feet. Our feet started making, the obvious noise. That's when this thing roared. So we both really feel that we surprised it, that it was perched out on that edge overlooking that field, and we snuck behind it and surprised it. I didn't take note of which direction the wind was blowing at that particular time, but, I've been out there in my own area here, and I mean, I smoke cigarettes, and I don't use any scent cover, and I've had great interactions here. And I believe that it's those differences that are going to make them think, what's that smell? Why is that smell out here in the forest? And they're going to come closer to investigate, if that makes sense to you.
Right. I mean, that could be... it could work just as well. And certainly, I mean, if going by what some investigators and their experiences, it doesn't matter, but who knows? They could smell you either way.
Yeah.
The smell to a deer may not even do anything. But
right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I would say, I just kind of go by. There's a lot of sightings by hunters, and in those sightings, they usually have pretty lengthy sightings, and in several cases I've heard where the creature did not seem to notice them, or at least for a while.
Right.
And those were the cases where I'm like, man, now that to me, that technique seems to work as far as getting a good, clear sighting and a lengthy sighting. as opposed to just going out and yeah, maybe they're coming around and they're near and you can hear them or they're doing things and you may know they're there, but they're still not giving you that, you know, the money shot.
And of course, and also playing on their level of curiosity. You know, there's so many different tips and tricks that can be used. We won't get into all that now. But going back, you mentioned about their heightened senses. And I talked about this with Mike Woolley when he was on the show as well. He's a real good friend of mine. In fact, I think you had some interaction with him with Skookum. I'm actually going to be in the sequel playing the Sasquatch. So that's I'm really looking forward to that. Hopefully I'll get to meet you then as well. But you know, these beings, these Sasquatch, they've not known a civilized life. They've been out there from birth. They haven't had the interactions or contaminations like we have. I mean, if you think about everything that we smell on a daily basis, chemicals, all these outside, I mean, even our ears, you know, with headphones and all the noises that we have to deal with on a daily basis, it makes sense to me that these Sasquatch living out there would have a much healthier existence on those levels without losing a sense of smell, without losing their hearing, if you will, due to all the noises and all the just crap that we live with on a daily basis and don't even think about.
Right. Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, it's a whole other existence that we've gotten very far away from, you know, so.
Now,
certainly,
I'm gonna switch gears a little bit here. Jean St. Jean and Jeff Byers are friends of mine. They're coming out with a new line of action figures under the banner Creature Replica. Gene has done some work for you. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, he did the sculpt for my Boggy Creek Fountain Monster figure.
I love the look of that. I love it. I've told Gene so many times that I love that sculpt. If you can you go ahead and maybe give a link of where people can find this and purchase it?
Yeah, you can get them through my Falk Monster site, Falk Monster, FOUKE Monster.net, FalkMonster.net. That's where I've got my online store. And basically those, I had to work a deal. Like in some case, I just wanted one for myself. But in order to do that, I had to find some way to produce and this and that. And, you know, I became friends with Gene, and he's an amazing sculptor. And if people
he's
don't
great.
Know, he's sculpted a lot of the action figures and things for DC Comics, Marvel Comics, the Universal Monsters. The list is on and on. And he's interested in Bigfoot. So he and I worked on this together. So once I had the master sculpture, I did actually try to find some ways and some other deals in order to produce sort of a cheaper statue of some sort, which fell through. I'm not in that line, and they couldn't get it made in China or any of this. So
yeah.
I tried U.S. companies in small quantities. Ended up, I found this company called Resin Realities out of New York that produces what they call garage resin model kits. And so they basically do the production for it, and that if you order it from me, essentially they ship straight to you. But it's an amazing figure, and you can get it either unpainted or painted, and man, it looks so cool. We tried to basically bring to life the creature from the old Legend of Boggy Creek movie poster. You see the silhouette, so Gene kind of visualized that in 3D, and it's amazing.
And guys, if you want to know what this model kit figurine looks like, go to the website. The poster that I made for Lyle Blackburn's for this episode, that is the model kit in the background behind Lyle. You know, a lot of people are like, "Well, what is that? Where'd that come from?" That is the model kit. I enlarged it and put it in the background behind Lyle. That's what it looks like. If you guys want to get it, go to falcmonster.net. I posted the link on our website. Yeah, Lyle, you know, Gene has been on the broadcast here twice already. He'll be back on the 14th of August. We're going to have a whole San Diego Comic-Con recap. And hopefully, and I know he's listening, hopefully there'll be a Falc Monster action figure in the works from him pretty soon. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, you know, I've been in talks. We're talking about some things coming up that are pretty exciting. So, yeah, it might not be beyond the realms of possibility.
Right. And that's kind of the same answer that I talked to Gene twice this week on the telephone for at least we get on the phone and we just talk forever. And I talked to him twice this week on telephone. That's kind of the same answer that I've gotten from him, too. I'm sure I'll have more information in the future when he's on the show. I'm going to take some callers, if you don't mind, here in a sec. But before we do that, what is in Lyle Blackburn's future? Is there going to be another book? Are you going even further into this?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been doing research for another book as I have time. I've got some possible humongous things coming up, but I'm unable to say what they are at the moment. I've been working on this and trying to decide what I can say and what I'm not supposed to say. I'm under a contract. And
Yeah, of course.
Well, I mean, I could say that I shot a pilot for a TV show, but that doesn't guarantee anything whatsoever. So I've kind of spent some time to see where this will go, and how that will develop. And I'm currently not certain, I guess you could say. So, but beyond that, of course, I want to write more books, and life has gotten very busy. I'm speaking at so many events, and I try to get out in the woods, and I got a family to support, and I work basically three jobs, and so I'm always working on something, and hopefully I can get a new book wrapped up at some point. I've got the research done. I just basically got to write it, so... There's a whole lot of things in the works, so maybe I can come on the show, you know, in another 6 months, and then I can bust out tons of stuff. You know, like.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I am happy just to talk to you, just to meet you. You know, I've kind of wanted it for a while, of course, and you know, I mean, I am thrilled to have you on the show. And anytime you want to come back on the show and promote or plug anything that you have in the works. Man, just let me know. It's not a problem at all.
Right. So yeah, probably several months down the road, I'll have a better vision into this crystal ball of where monsters are taking me next. But certainly, it's something I'd love to do. And you know, one thing that I've enjoyed is this the response from the books. I've gotten so much good response to that I feel like. People enjoy those things, and you know, I'm trying to find ways in which I can free more time in order to write more books. So that's kind of the goal.
I'm definitely going to try to pick up those books right now. Finances are a little crazy, but yeah, I definitely want to get those and read up on them. I got a question to ask you. Who had the cowboy hat look first, you or Ken Gerhardt?
I think it was a tie. We just came out of the womb with the cowboy hat on. It's funny, people laugh at that, and we're like, you know, we're like brothers, and we're so similar in so many ways. We're both singers in rock bands, and in those rock bands, we wore the hat. You know, we've always been interested in cryptids and this sort of thing, and so we've tried to figure it out. I'm not sure how many, you know, and this would have been decades ago, who actually had the hat first, but, you know, we just say it's awesome because people mistake us for each other, so we're basically in two places at once, because wherever you see one of us, you're thinking of the other. It's like it's a genius, you know, marketing plan for us to be able to cover double ground. And so, yeah, it's...
Well, I'll tell you someone that you remind me of, and hopefully you don't think this is a bad thing, Sully from Godsmack.
Yeah, well, that's a new one. I used to get the singer from Monster Magnet a lot. Let's see, some people say Dave Grohl, so yeah, Sully could be one. That's cool.
But you know what? You should try to get you a deal selling your own hats.
Oh yeah, well, I'm sure once I, you know, if I had time, I definitely would.
Oh, I understand that. I understand that 100%. Well, we're going to go ahead. We've got, we've got about 43 minutes left on the show. What I'm going to do, Lyle, if it's okay with you, is I'm going to take some calls, and then we'll get you back on. And anything that you want to promote or web pages that you want to throw out there, I'll let you go ahead and do that before we get off the air. If you're fine with that, you know, I've got a caller in queue. I'll go ahead and bring it on.
Sure.
Okay, and guys, if you're listening, if you want to call in, the number is 323-580-5703. That's 323-580-5703. We're going to take calls at this time. You guys call in. If you have any questions, feel free to ask. Hello, caller. You're on the air with Lyle Blackburn.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Hi, you're on the air. Who am I speaking with?
You don't recognize the number? What?
I'm talking to the caller.
Can you hear me?
Yes, barely. Do you have a question?
I said, hey, brother, you don't recognize the number?
No, I don't. I even typed it in my phone to try to figure out who it was. Who is this?
It's Jeff, man.
Oh, okay. All right. No, man. I typed the number in the phone. It didn't pull up your name or anything, so I'm like, I don't know whose number this is. But then, Lyle, this is my buddy Jeff Stewart. I'm sure you guys may know each other.
Yeah, I kind of know that old boy. What's going on,
just
brother?
Just a little bit. Oh, man, not much. Just enjoying listening to the show, man. Just enjoying it.
Cool, man. How's it going? How you feeling?
Oh, man, just waiting on them. They're going to operate on this old leg here pretty soon, get me back up and motivating.
Good. Good to hear.
I can't wait. I'm ready to get back out there and get in the woods. Hopefully it'll be cooler weather at least by the time I get back out there.
I hear you. Yeah, Jeff and I, you know, a lot of times I call Jeff when I'm actually out in the field and we're sitting there talking about things that are happening, and I can just hear it in Jeff's voice how bad he wants to be out there.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, hopefully he'll be back in full force. It's a good time to be out because it gets so hot right now anyway. So, yeah, I'd give it a month or two. And although today in Texas is very nice. I mean, the weather's unbelievable here. Of course, when it gets like that, I want to be in the woods. You know, you can't plan for this.
And you know what's so weird this year? Here in Texas, we've actually had the mildest summer I remember in so long. I know right here at where I'm at, we have yet to have over a 100-degree day. We've had some 97s and stuff like that, but you know, usually by now we've already hit that, you know, 105, 106 degree mark. And as of yet, we have not had that.
Right. And, in fact, I think you and I were talking about that the other night, Jeff, whenever we were on the phone, how unusually cool this summer has been thus far. And that leads me to a question. And Jeff, I'm going to ask Lyle first, of course, but you can answer shortly also. Lyle, what do you find in your research, in your investigating, what have you found to be the best season for activity?
I think, and I've done a lot of research and interviewed people and collected a lot of data. For some reason, I see a lot of sightings in winter. A lot of times, even like January, February, if people are out in those cold times, a lot of sightings. You know, I'm talking about in the south. And then I find that either like late spring or early fall would be some of the other times when I think that there's a lot of activity. And so, you know, of course, those are the times I try to get out when I can.
I'm going to agree with you there. I'm actually surprised, and like I told Jeff the other night, I'm sure it has to do with the cooler summer that we have. But I'm actually surprised to get as much activity during the summer as I have this summer. Usually my peak times are fall and spring. I have had activity, as you said, in February and January. And I'm kind of leaning towards the reason that there's more sightings in January, February, maybe even into March, is due to the fact that hunting season is over and these things are realizing it and are moving back into territories that were once taken over by hunters.
Yeah, that's certainly got to be a factor because, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that gunshots and guys running through the woods, they're going to, you know, slip into the shadows and move somewhere else. So,
yeah, deeper into the forest.
Of course, man. You got ATVs running all over the woods, smell of gasoline, smells of campfires, human smells, you know, like you were talking about earlier about the, you know, going into the woods and being scent free and everything. That's one of the things I've been a proponent of for decades and I've written about constantly is I'm a firm believer in being scent free. I even when I'm not out in the woods, I don't wear any colognes. I don't bathe in anything with a scent to it. I use scent free deodorants. Everything I use is scent free. Detergent, my wife washes my clothes in, they're all scent free. I just do that because being a hunter and being the person that I am, I'm always out in the woods and that's just the way I am. And I'm a firm believer that in order to get that long-term encounter that we need to be more scent-free, not saying that being where they can smell you, you won't see them. A lot of people do, but what I'm trying to have a brief encounter. I'm trying to have that long term. Like Lyle said, so many other hunters have talked about having a long term encounter, and that's what, you know, maybe I'm hoping maybe they're out there and smell what they do smell of me isn't a tool.
Well, you know, Jeff, you and I, I'm sorry, go ahead, Lyle. I didn't mean to.
No, I was going to say, yeah, by the time they do zero in on the smell, you've at least been able to observe them for, you know, a minute or two or something. So.
Right. It also depends on whether you're out there during the day or during the night because, you know, you're only going to get the observance that they want you to have at night. You know, during the day, yeah, that I think that's going to be a little bit different story. Now, Jeff, going back to the question, you and I touched on this the other night, and we're going to get into that. What do you feel is the best time of the year for activity in your experiences?
I have had more my two face-to-face encounters were both in the summertime. But I've had more activity as far as vocalizations, as far as going out and being able to see that something has been in my area, you know, tracks, broken limbs, things like that, in the wintertime. But both of my face-to-face encounters came in the summertime, once when I was 15, and then again just last year. You know, and both of those happened in during feeding times, I'll say, because one happened whenever the Bigfoot was eating some fish guts that we had left out, and the other time it was actually jumped out of a tree almost on my head, where it was actually sitting in a tree over a game trail that I happened to be walking down. So, you know, both of those were hunting times, and to me it's like late summer and late winter where I'm at.
Yeah. Which leads me into the next question, and Lyle, I want to get, you know, based on the research and the investigating that you've done, your take on this. Jeff and I were talking the other night, and we kind of got on the subject of when Sasquatch would possibly mate, when mating season would possibly be for them. And both of us kind of agreed. What would you think would be, and this is all just guessing, of course, Lyle, you know, if you don't even want to touch the subject, I'll understand.
Based on my own mating rituals, it would be year-round.
There you go.
That, now, I'm not talking about practicing.
I see. Well, sometimes if you're not careful with practicing, it'll be the real thing.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
Oh, geez. Well, yeah, it would be just a total wild guess because I just don't have enough empirical data with which to make any sort of a realistic guess. So, boy, I haven't thought too much about that, but shoot, I don't know. Jeff's seen a few, so maybe he could give a better guess.
Well, in my lifetime, I've seen three as well. And Jeff and I were talking, and it kind of makes sense. A lot of people think that mating season for these things would be in the spring. However, Jeff and I both agreed that if they have the same gestational period as a human, that would put the babies, if you will, being born in December, right at wintertime when there's a lack of food and a lack of cover, and it just kind of doesn't make Jeff, help me out here, man. It just doesn't kind of make too much sense.
Well, it really doesn't make sense because it's going to be our harshest time of year as far as weather goes, wet, nasty, cold, what have you. So they're going to have a lot harder time finding a place to take cover and a lot harder time with a young infant, you know, keeping that young infant sick from the weather and different things. Now, this is all speculation, you know, based on just my own ideas. But it's placed that breeding time, that estrus period, whatever you want to call it, at different times, say around this time of year, around July. That would put baby being born in about March or April.
And
it's real nice,
Jeff,
time. The flappers, go ahead.
Jeff, you're kind of breaking up. Guys, listeners, what Jeff is saying is he believes that it would be more around this time of the year because that would be put the babies being born in the spring when things are warming up, the forest is getting thicker. Yeah, then you have your berry, you know, your growth of berries and different fruits and things of that nature. So he and I both are kind of leaning more towards. That's all assuming, of course, Lyle, that they have the same gestational period, you know, as humans. That's assuming that they have the same gestation. Now, they might have an even longer one, and that may make sense, Jeff, that mating season is in the spring. If they have a year-long gestational period, you know, it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's purely just, you know, just a guessing game, an educated guessing game, but a guessing game nonetheless. I mean, because we have no idea. I mean, these creatures may only breed once every 2 or 3 years. We don't know.
Right.
Maybe one reason why there's so few of them is because of their breeding. You know, they may – there's been – I've read before, you know, where people have speculated that their females don't even come into a breeding age until they're, you know, 20-plus years of age. So,
right.
You know, there's lots of theories, you know, and you can just add, you know, the stuff that we talk about, you know, just chalk it up to theories. But it's, you know, the way I look at it is, as long as we're engaged in logical, educated, sincere discussion on our theories, it's all good.
Right, right.
Excuse me.
Wow, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, well, I was just kind of thinking about it. I guess, you know, one place to start, you know, would be to look at other large animals, you know, what timing and gestation do bears have, gorillas. I mean, obviously, gorillas don't live in the same temperate environment, you know, the same temperature type environments, but yeah, you know, if you kind of started looking at other large animals and then kind of, you know, overlaid that with, you know, what we believe Bigfoot, you know, to be, and yeah, you could probably definitely make some good, at least estimations. And I like what Jeff's saying is maybe they don't breed, you know, very infrequently, which would explain why there's so few of them. So there's a ton of factors that
now see that sounds more like my relationship there.
Well,
Lyle's the big stud in the group.
Lyle.
Yeah.
Oh, did you hear me?
Yeah. You're breaking up now, actually. I could hear you before, but now.
Let me try to.
Jeff, you're breaking up really bad, brother. Hello, Jeff? I think we just lost him. Yeah, we lost him. Lyle, you're still on with me, right?
I'm here. That question self-destructed.
Yeah, I didn't gather too much of what he was trying to say on that one either. Guys, look, we still have 25 minutes. You know, if you guys want to call in, the number is 323-580-5703. We're live on air with Lyle Blackburn. You know, Lyle, I'll tell you what, man. You know, just the fact that you're in such close proximity to Falk, I think is awesome. I've always wanted to visit there. I've always wanted to check it out. And I'm pretty sure I'll get the chance. I know, you know, when we start shooting for Skookum 2, I know I'll definitely be there. But I'm pretty sure I might be there even earlier, say October. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, you know, it's a great place to go. I mean, and for many, it's sort of the mecca of Southern Bigfoot. I mean, you know, because of the significance of the legend of Boggy Creek and, you know, it's on the bucket list for most of my friends and the squatchers I know. So I'm always happy when somebody can actually go there and visit. And I've had guys come up. I mean, my buddy Rob Robinson's come up from Florida, you know, guys from just all around
And I don't know, Boggy Creek, it means a lot to me, so I'm always excited when somebody can also go up to the area, and even better if I could, you know, join in and show them around when, you know,
right,
I try
right.
when I can.
Of course,
so,
of course.
But,
now I have to ask, are you interested in any other areas of purported Sasquatch activity? Say, the Cascades or Washington State, Oregon. Are you interested in going investigating some of those areas as well?
Well, certainly. I mean, that's some place on my bucket list is to go up into those areas, and I've had a lot of great invites, and it's something I'm kind of trying to get into the schedule. It would be something that I would probably just do on my own just for me, because
yeah.
as far as book research, you know, I'm an expert in the South. It's the place I'm most familiar with. It's easier to get to. So when I do book research, I usually concentrate here. But you know, the new book I'm working on...
For personal experience, you would just, you know, go to enjoy it yourself is what you're saying.
Yeah, because a lot of people have asked me, hey, would you ever write a book about, you know, Bigfoot and Pacific Northwest or whatever. It's like, you know, I could, but there's so many other great books already written by people who, you know, have been there, experienced things, and I would just, you know, there's not much more I could bring to it. So I oftentimes, and so far what I've done with my books, like with Boggy Creek, no one's ever written a book on it. Nobody had ever listened to the Lizard King.
That's so amazing to think that. And see, I like that. I do understand and respect and appreciate that. I like that about you is what one thing I like about you is the fact that you're getting out these lesser known legends of Sasquatch or even Lizard Man. These lesser known, you know, because Patty, you know, the Pacific Northwest gets so much attention, and you know, I really try to get people to realize that it's not just the Pacific Northwest. And so many times I see on these blogs and pages, Facebook pages and posts and stuff, people wanting to go, you know, go out there. I'm like, you don't have to go that far, you know.
Right.
They're a lot closer than what you may realize. And the thing that bothers me, is so many people going out there, you're going to get, and I know it's a huge area, guys, don't bash me for this, but I'm sure at some point you're going to get some kind of crossover, like I said earlier, where one investigative team is doing the call blasts or howls or whatever, and you get another investigative team somewhere else thinking, oh, we got the Holy Grail, you know? When in reality, it's just another team. Basically, what I'm saying is I could see where the Pacific Northwest would be very saturated.
Possibly so, yeah. I mean, in therein, if I went there, if you went there, you'd probably need to go with some experienced guys who know where to go to get off the beaten path.
To avoid, right. To avoid
yeah,
all
so,
that.
Because if I just drove there by myself, hey, okay, let's go, I could accidentally get in the middle of the most, you know, populated Bigfoot research area ever and hear the Ohio howl 45 times. It's someplace I really want to go, not only for, you know, the interest of Bigfoot, but it's beautiful countryside, and that's part of the reason why I do this is because I love the outdoors. So, man, that's just some place I want to go. And the guys from the Olympic Project, I've talked to some of them, and so, unfortunately, you know, writing the books and doing all that takes so much darn time that I don't have any personal time to do anything
right.
at all. So there's no vacations for me or any, you know, or any of that stuff.
I can totally understand that. I'm actually disabled and in the process of going through all the courts for that at this point in time, which gives me time to, you know, do a little bit more of this. You know, for, I'm also fortunate that in my area, now I know that there's a lot of researchers throughout Mississippi, but in my area, I'm the only one out here doing it. You know, I don't have to worry about really anyone else being out there, and I'm really, really fortunate for that. And that's, like we said earlier, that's one reason I am strict about keeping this location as secret as I can.
Yeah.
Because well, I don't want to be picking up other investigators. I don't want other investigators to come out here with their whole finding. And I know you were on the show Finding Bigfoot, but the way they do things I don't agree with. That whole mentality coming out here and scaring what I know to be out there, scaring it off and ruin it for, you know, for me.
Right. And I mean, yeah, I definitely know a lot of guys who have shared with me information that I don't pass on or put in my books because they're the same way. They don't want to divulge something and then have a bunch of people overrun it. So that's certainly a concern, especially because Bigfooting is so popular now. You know, if this was 10 years
yeah.
ago, nobody would pay any attention. But really now, you know, people are into this, and so there's a lot more people going out.
And there's certain organizations that have kind of made it similar to a Walmart, you know, of research, and, you know, they want your location so that they can monopolize and exploit it, you know, and I'm just not down for that, you know. I say let these things be. You know, you want to go out there and interact with them, fine, go ahead. You know, you want to research them, fine, go ahead. But don't do it so much so that it actually drives them off.
Right. But, I mean, you know, it's always down to the individual.
And I'm not saying, right, I'm not saying you, of course. I'm speaking in general.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're saying. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's always a choice to whether this information is shared or not shared. And the shows and things like that, I mean, on one hand, it's good because interest in Bigfoot is high, and I think that makes it a little more socially acceptable for some of the witnesses to share their stories. So it's actually a help to document some cases. But, you know, on the flip side, sure, it brings on a more commercialized version of it. So there's always good and bad about all the aspects of any of this kind of quote-unquote scientific research. And this, you know, I'm sure this happens with anything. The ivory-billed woodpecker, you know, it's a supposedly gone extinct. There's been sightings. I know I've, you know, people don't want to say they've seen it because then a bunch of people will shut them out of their hunting leases and things. There's always a conflict between science and people's own research. So it's a tricky balance.
I understand that completely. You know, we have Jeff back with us. Let's see if we can get him back in here. Jeff, are you there?
Oh, wow.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Everything's sorted out?
Who knows? The Wi-Fi will probably drop. We got those storms been rolling through here all day, so the Wi-Fi has been coming and going.
Right. Yeah, you were asking Lyle a question before we lost you.
Oh, yeah. I had talked to Ken, and he told me a funny story where he was at a whatever event that he was at, and someone came up to him, he was wearing his hat, and asked him if he was a Lyle Blackburn cosplayer.
Yeah, that was at San Diego Comic-Con.
I saw that picture. I saw that picture he posted too.
I thought, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's hilarious. I mean, that tops. I mean, and that's the funny stuff we always share between each other. This has got to be the funniest one, like somebody faking that. And, you know, but again, we're like in two places at once. You know, it's like, you know, covering all the bases.
And knowing Ken, I mean, I just wonder how he handled it because, you know, he sometimes, you know, he'll take the opportunity to really kind of prank on somebody, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure he had a good time with it. And
because had it been me, I would have said, no, I am Lyle Blackburn.
That's right, dude. That could have got me in some real big trouble if he would have said, yes, I'm actually Lyle Blackburn. And then he did something really stupid. I'd be like, dude, I wasn't at San Diego Comic-Con. I swear it was not me.
Exactly. Although you could get out of it if Ken ever took his hat off, you know. I think you got just a little more hair up top.
So far.
Now, I say that in all love and everything because I love Ken. He, like you said, he's like a brother. He's like a brother to me, too. So, you know, I get away with picking at him a little bit. Not much, but a little bit.
Right. We had a good time with it.
I'm hoping to try to get Ken on in the near future as well.
Oh yeah,
that would be awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Weren't you already on this show? Aren't you Lyle? Oh, <hey. laughs>
guys, we've got about 10 minutes left. If you guys, if there's anything that you want to get out there, Lyle, and let people make people aware of, maybe some websites, how they can get in touch with you, if they're in that foul area and have some incidents that they want to share?
Yeah, definitely. Of course, the best way to find more about me and to get in touch with me is at my website, lyleblackburn.com. There's links there on where you can purchase my books. They're available signed copies from me on my website. You can get them in any other flavor, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, Kindle, Nook, ebook on iTunes. You can get it all. And, of course, if you're interested in interesting, strange monster cases, then definitely pick up one of my books. And, of course, if you are interested in knowing the facts behind the legend of Boggy Creek, then you definitely will get The Beast of Boggy Creek. So I've also got my great book.
They can get all this from that website, right? The one you gave earlier for the model kit. They can get the books there as well, right?
That too, yeah. So, and for more information on the Fout Monster, see my foutmonster.net site. There's links from my site to it, of course. And I've got a larger store on the Fout Monster site where you can get some T-shirts and whatever else. Sometimes I pick up stuff from the Monster Mart and Fout and make it available because people, you know, love souvenirs from the area. So definitely hit up those sites, and if you've got some Bigfoot encounters that you think I ought to hear about, hit me up, because I'm always collecting reports and research.
Man, I tell you what, La, I really, really do appreciate you coming on with me, man. It's been great. It's been awesome. It's been something that I've been looking forward to for a while.
You bet. I figured I got to do it. We know all the same people. I mean, you know, as well.
we run with the same crowd.
That's right.
I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or not, is it?
I don't know.
I'm going to be over there sooner or later. I'm going to be over there with you guys.
We are friends.
Later.
because we are all friends with some pretty shady people.
Oh, don't say that, man. Don't say
that. Right. Myself included. I love shady people.
You guys listening? He is joking, of course. He is joking, of course. I've never dealt with a better group of people, I'll tell you.
We just pretend to be shady.
You're going to get us in trouble,
Joe. That's it, man.
Yeah.
Oh, they all know me. They all know
yeah.
how I am.
We're slowly losing our credibility.
If they don't know that I'm going to pick at them, then they don't know me.
That's right. We would expect none less.
Yeah,
nothing
less. I'm still waiting to get an invite for Jeff's show. I'm sure it'll happen sooner or later. Hint, hint.
Well, actually, you know, the new show, I have actually ended the Crypto Zoo, and we are now fixing to enter into the Monsters, Mysteries, and Mayhem show, which is going to be starting really soon. We are getting all of the details hammered down. We're actually going to have our own website, not actually a Facebook page, but we've got one of those already, but we're going to actually have an actual website that is Monsters, Mysteries, and Mayhem. And this way, we're going to be able to cover a little bit more than just cryptids. We're going to cover everything from one of my passions is researching serial killers, but we're going to cover everything from serial killers to the paranormal to things like spontaneous human combustion, all the way right down to our normal passion for cryptids. And that way, you know, we can open it up just a little bit more and kind of encompass a few more people, get a few more fans interested in what we do, and maybe we can spread the gospel of the world of cryptozoology right around to them.
And guys, we at Onyx Knights Paranormal we're going to be partnering up with the Monsters, Mysteries, and Mayhem. We're going to be we're going to be all together. So you guys definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Go over to Facebook, follow that group, that page. When the website comes out, we're going to be involved with that also. And the big thing that I'm looking forward to is the fact that we're going to have our own report section where you can write in and give your own testimonial encounters and reports. Lila, I want to get back to you real quick. Is there anything else that you want to promote or?
No, I guess that ought to cover it. I appreciate you having me on and the stimulating Bigfoot conversations as always.
I hear you. Definitely stay in touch, of course, brother. And like I said, if you've got anything in the future that you want to promote, let me know. I'd definitely love to have you back on anytime.
Awesome. Sounds good, man. Enjoy it.
Law's always a great guest, man, on anywhere he's at. And I'll tell you what, I was privileged to go and see Law and Ghoultown in their final performance, and it was spectacular. It was awesome. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and hanging with the guys after the show was awesome. And Lyle, it was an honor to get to see y'all do that.
Oh man, well I'm glad you got to make it out. That meant something to me. So, you know, it was mutual. So I'm glad you were there. It was good times, and always good times talking to you.
You too, brother.
Thank you.
Feeling better.
All right.
Most definitely. Thank you again, Lyle, for coming on. I really do appreciate it. Like I said, anything you need, man, just holler at me, and I'm there, buddy.
All right. Sounds good, man. You guys take it easy.
Take care. You have a good night as well.
Night, brother.
All right, Jeff, you take care too, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
You too. All right, guys, that was my good buddy Jeff Stewart and, of course, Lyle Blackburn. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Next week we're going to have author J.M. Bailey with us. She's the author of the book Eve, I've read this book. This book is awesome. You guys have got to check it out. I posted some links to the Amazon over on our Facebook group page. You guys check it out. Go over to Amazon. Look up Eve. It's a Sasquatch-related story. I won't get too much into it at this point in time, but tune in next week because she'll be on. And we'll try to discuss as much of it as we can without giving away any spoilers. That'll do for me tonight. I need to go get some rest, and I'm actually having a lot of complications from a shoulder surgery I had recently. But I'm going to go ahead and cut it off, and I appreciate you guys' support, tuning in. Much love. Take care. Be safe, and I'll see you next week.